If you speak the truth, have a foot in the stirrup.
Hello, and welcome to another installment of the Sea Realm Podcast. I am your host, KMO, and this is episode number 541, Restoration and Identity, prepared for release onto the World Wide Web on Tuesday, March 19th, 2019. I'll play a conversation with Jordan and Fabio. They are both interns at the Greater Falls Community Justice Center here in Bellows Falls. That is where I go to participate in COSA sessions. COSA stands for Circles of Support and Accountability. And Jordan, one of the two guests that you'll be hearing, describes the COSA process pretty early on in the conversation. So what you'll hear was broadcast live and also recorded at the WOOL studio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, on the island. And if you don't know what I mean by that, well, just go to Google Earth and Google Maps and have a look at Bellows Falls. There is an island. I'll say a bit more at the end of the episode, but for now, here's my conversation with Jordan and Fabio.
You're listening to the Sea Realm Podcast. C stands for consciousness.
First off, Jordan, let's start with you. You are the outreach and advocacy coordinator. What does that mean and what do you do?
Yeah, so that's a little confusing of a title, I guess. So I do a variety of things. I do a lot of outreach to the community, which basically means help putting on events, getting our name out there, working with other local businesses and organizations. I also do a bit of victim advocacy, as well as working with the schools and the school district, doing restorative practices in the schools with students, teachers, admin, parents at times. So kind of a variety of things.
Well, one thing I'll ask you to unpack there is restorative justice. What does that mean?
Yeah, so restorative justice is kind of a big umbrella term, but we look at it as looking at the harm that's been done and kind of what are the needs to repair those harms. So that's working with both victims and offenders and addressing the harm that was done and what are the needs that can be done to repair those harms.
So restorative justice is different from the sort of justice that the so-called justice system metes out, which is basically retributive justice, basically punishing people for wrongdoing. How is restorative justice different?
So restorative justice is different because, again, like I said, it focuses on the needs. The criminal justice system that we have in place doesn't so much focus on what people need, and just focuses on the punishment and whether that punishment actually does anything for both the offender or the victim is not really ever addressed. So let's say you get your car broken into. A lot of times nothing is actually done for the victim. The perpetrator might get a fine or sent to jail, and whether they actually can talk to the victim or understand and hear the harm that they caused, that punishment might not actually do anything. So restorative justice really looks at what was the crime committed and what impact did that have and what actions can be taken to repair that harm.
Not compromising anybody's privacy, but would you give an example of how an instance of community justice or restorative justice at work would be obviously different from the sort of justice that the criminal justice system metes out?
Yeah, so a common thing that we do at the Greater Falls Community Justice Center are COSAs, which stand for Circles of Support and Accountability. And COSAs are made up of one person who is called the core member, and they're someone who has committed a crime or crimes and has been spent time in the prison system. And they sit in circle with 3 to 4 community members, volunteers, as well as someone running the circle. And the point is to talk about what has been done, what are their needs, and how those needs can be met. So the core member is able to tell their story, but also listen to the community members and hear the community members' stories as well. And ideally, we would bring in a victim as well. That doesn't always happen because that's really difficult to bring in. But we are working on getting that to happen more often to support the victims as well.
Fabio, similar questions for you. Victim advocate and conflict mediator, what does that mean and what do you do?
Let's find an alternative route to deal with this broken law or this harm that was made in the community. So as a victim advocate, my role would be to begin conversations with the person that was harmed in the incident and try to see how their voice can be present, always by choice, of course, in healing this community harm that was done. We really see restorative justice really likes to look at harm and impact through a relationship lens. So instead of looking at it through the normal justice lens, which is a broken rule, there's a penalty, restorative justice looks at it as there was a relationship here and something happened for it to break and cause this harm. So my role as a victim advocate would be always to bring in victims' voices into like restorative panels that would happen between a coordinator and someone who had committed that crime.
When you talk about bringing in the victim's voice, does that mean bringing the victim in, or does that mean representing the victim's interest in the conversation?
That's a great question. I think it's both. It could definitely be both. I think what's really important in the work that we do is, as mentioned by Jordan, a lot of the work today doesn't involve victims in the process. So the first thing we would do is reaching out to the victims of crimes and seeing how their voice would be present. Either they want to show up and say, I want to meet the person who I did this harm to, or this harm that was done to me. Some people might just want to draft up a letter. Someone might want to just let them know what happened to them as a result. So it's very varied depending on what the victim's needs are to really get over this hump of a crime. You know, we think of these crimes, but we forget that maybe that store owner whose window got broken in my original story, maybe he lost business that day. Because he had to close the shop. So that's a day's worth of wages. There's a lot of little pieces in conflict that we don't really look into. It's like the ripples effect. But restorative justice says, hey, let's take all of those ripples into consideration and bring the voices of those who are harmed and also bring the voices of those who do the harming to kind of understand what brought them to do that.
I'll ask both of you this, but we'll stick with you for the moment. What brought you to this work? What experiences in your past or what motivations brought you to be, you know, working where you are in the community where you are?
Good question. So I used to be in education. I used to be a teacher, a high school teacher, a high school Spanish teacher for about 6 years.
Where was that?
I started in upstate New York, Union Springs Academy, shout out to them. And then Greater Boston Academy for 4 years. Shout out to them also.
So you are not a native Vermonter?
I am not a native Vermonter. I'm actually from Connecticut, from the other side of the river.
Well, pretty close as far as, you know, global or even continent-wide standards go.
Very much so.
How long have you been in Vermont?
I've been in Vermont for about a year and a almost 2 years. Getting on by August, it'll be 2 years.
And is there anything from your teaching experience that you carry over into the work that you're doing now?
Very much so. I first off want to say that I really respect the work of educators and teachers. It's such a valuable job that's at times, most of the time, underpaid and under-respected and underappreciated. And as someone that was in that role, it's really hard to be a teacher and an educator without having some form of restorative justice process involved, because, you know, school is a system with rules. And at times these rules are impede the success of our young folks. So that was something that I realized in my teaching experience, that there was limitations to the system. So I knew I had to leave and kind of figure out what would be the best route to come back into education. And then I came across this idea of peace building and conflict transformation, and conflict mediation specifically, that really interested me in seeking alternative ways of impacting schools, not so much as a direct teacher.
What sort of training did you have to undergo in order to do the work that you do now?
So Jordan and I are both in our graduate program right now at the School of International Learning, Graduate Institute in Brattleboro, Vermont.
Say a little something about the training, though. What are you learning there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we both have different degrees. My degree is in peace building and conflict transformation. And Jordan, I don't know if you want to say a little bit about yours.
Yeah, my degree is actually in sustainable development, but I also have done a lot of focus on conflict transformation and peace building.
So my degree in conflict transformation has really looked at domestic and international strategies for dealing with conflict. It's very, very much an umbrella term that encompasses a lot of work globally, internationally, nationally, domestically, in small communities, but centered around how to mitigate the many forms of conflict.
So what are some of those forms of conflict?
Absolutely. So I remember in some of our classes, we've looked at strategies of how to look at international conflicts. For example, ones that come to mind that we've studied in class was a Boko Haram conflict in Nigeria, the conflict going on in Afghanistan. So we look at strategies that have been used in the field by practitioners and how to look at impacting conflict from varied ways.
You are doing the socially appropriate thing and making eye contact with me, but do try to keep your mouth right in the mic there.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. Jordan, I'm curious about your degree and your studies in sustainable development. How does that relate to restorative justice?
Yeah, so when people first hear sustainable development, most people think of the environment, of climate change, and that's absolutely under the umbrella of sustainable development. But I more focus on the idea of sustainable communities and how communities can be empowered and work on resiliency in terms of them being able to thrive not only now but into the future. So pairing it with conflict transformation and peace building, sustainable, so that communities can be sustainable and move forward into the future.
So for example, in a community like Bellows Falls, how would that come into effect?
So it's looking at different issues that are affecting the community, and I really have liked looking at sustainable development in terms of relationships, which is what restorative justice really does. So it's how can we build relationships so that we can build the community and work on the issues that are affecting the community. So it could be in terms of education, it could be in terms of economic development, jobs. How can we build relationships so that the community can lean on each other to improve what needs to be improved?
So again, without compromising anybody's privacy, are there any stories you can tell that would illustrate the concepts that you're describing?
Yeah, so kind of going off one of the things that we study at our grad program is a big thing we talk about is the idea of conflict and the idea of positive peace versus negative peace. So many people think of peace as in no conflict happening, but we really learn that conflict is actually a really good thing. And conflict allows people who have been silenced to give their voices. Conflict allows for change. So a lot of the work we do here is in mediation, in community work, is trying to figure out what are the conflicts going on and how can we not ignore them, but how can we get through them by meeting the needs of the people and talking about what harm is done and how can we rebuild those bridges.
Well, thinking about a particular person that you've been involved with, and I don't have that person in mind, but what was their need and what could you do to help them sustainably move forward into the future and have that need met?
Yeah, so when you ask that, I think immediately of the work I'm doing in one of the schools. I run girls' empowerment circles. So we sit in circle with several middle school girls and address issues that affect their everyday lives. And many of them are struggling with things that all middle schoolers struggle with, but especially girls, around bullying, around self-image, around confidence. And so we've used those circles to address different issues around suspension, around in-school suspension. And so I guess one of the things I'm thinking of is sitting in circle with two people that were in conflict in school that resulted in one of them getting suspended. And in looking at it from a punitive justice lens, in terms of a lens that most people take on, the suspension was enough, and that addressed the issue. Whereas we look at it from a restorative justice lens, and we try to figure out, okay, why did you act that way? Why did you say those mean things? And it really comes down to maybe one of the girls was bullied before, so she was acting out and defending herself. Maybe something at home was going on. We try to look past the initial action and get to the root of what was happening. And from there, we can move forward and figure out where they need to go to feel safe at school, to feel heard, and what they need moving forward.
So when you say what they need moving forward, you're talking about the offender.
I'm talking about both. So if I'm thinking of something where a student yelled at a teacher and made the teacher feel really hurt, we sit in circle and we talk to both of them. We talk to the teacher. We ask them how they felt and how what they need moving forward from the student. And then we sit with the student as well. And we ask them, what happened? Why did you say those things? What's going on in your life? How can we help you feel safer in school, feel heard? What can we do? And how can we all work together?
What are some common answers to those questions? Like, how can you help somebody feel safe at school if they've been bullied?
We can work on figuring out, what friends do you have? How can we develop a support system for you? If something is happening, is there a trusted adult in the school that you can go talk to? Is there places that you can go to feel safe? And if not, how can we as the adults build a place for you to feel safe? Mm. Can it be a room? Can it be a person? Can it be maybe a code word to your teacher to say, hey, I need a break. Hey, I need you to come over. It varies per situation, whether it's physical harm is going to be different than, you know, taunting or the small micro harms. So it really does depend on the situation.
Did you have something to add to that?
No, I think that...
Oh. I missed your vocalization. Sorry. That's okay.
I actually do. There's a lot of what we do, that Jordan so eloquently stated, is centered around bringing back the importance of relationships, like in all aspects of restorative justice or all forms of conflict. And especially you had mentioned like a kid in school, like how does restorative justice work with keeping kids out of trouble? And I think what we do is not the misconception, which is like the magic stick or like the magic training, like one training, you're ready to go. Justice is served. Mm-hmm. It's about building a culture and building relationships and community that can not, when conflict happens, it becomes a thing, like it becomes detrimental. No, where there's community and where there's relationships, when conflict happens, there's opportunities and strategies to do things in a way that's safe for all parties. So how do we keep kids from getting into trouble at school? By building communities that hold them, that listen to all sides of the party and not let things like status. Let's say, well, there's a teacher and there's a student. There's more power from the teacher. So this idea that kids have when they walk into school, that they're powerless, that they have no voice, that they have no place. But they do when there's a community that holds them. I know that, I hope that was clear.
Yeah, it was. There was bullying in my school, you know, when I was a student. But there was no internet at the time. Or, you know, there was, but I didn't have any notion of it. This is in the 80s. And things are different now in that, you know, when I left school, I was away from the bullies. But today, the bullies are online. Mm. And, you know, I know of children, school kids, who have been harassed online. Is that something that comes up in your work?
Very much so. It's such a big part of our work, and especially me personally. I was also taunted. It was as a kid also through online chatting. I know back in the day it was like online chats, and I remember
like IRC.
Yes, like AOL chat, all of those, Yahoo chat. So I remember being taunted through those online platforms. But you're right. You know, you could log off and it was done. But nowadays, it's a whole different game. You know, social media has made it so that everyone is there at all times. And that's really important in our work. It's super, super important in our work because that's what we encounter in a lot of the schools work that we do. And in response to that, our office has actually developed in collaboration with Becca Jacobson, which is another colleague of ours. We've developed an online citizenship training that teaches young folks how to not look at social media as something bad, like it's this bad thing that just does bad things. But it's also really great. It builds community. So how can we engage online in a way that also encompasses compassion and empathy? And that's a great segue to what we've developed to address online citizenship.
So we actually have a training around online citizenship. But kind of before we give that training, we have, I guess, a pre-training that we do before really talking about being online. And that is a training focused on developing compassion and empathy using a tool that we often use in our trainings called an identity wheel. Fabio, do you want to speak more on that?
Absolutely. So an identity wheel is a tool used in the social justice field as a way of starting conversations around the pieces that encompass all of us. So I usually have a visual to show it, but I'll try my best to explain what the identity wheel is verbally. It's literally a circle, and we facilitate this process of asking participants to explore all the different aspects of their social identity. So by social identity, I mean anything that identifies them socially, like their race, their ethnicity, their social economic status, their gender, their professional career. So all these things that encompass who they are. And then we facilitate a conversation around what parts of yourself are in conflict, what parts of yourself are that pair each other well. And then we have conversations around stories connected to these identities, which we believe in our practice of this tool and use of this tool has shown that if we have more empathy and compassion with ourself, we believe that it's possible to exchange that same compassion and empathy with ourself with others. An example of that could be, so I identify as a person of color. I also identify as growing up in a religious household. I grew up identifying as a queer man, cisgender man. So a lot of those identities are in conflict sometimes. You know, my religious upbringing is in conflict with my identity of being a queer person. So facilitating conversations around what that looks like and then inviting those to practice that same empathy and compassion with others.
So can you think of a person who has clearly been helped by this process? And again, as always, preserving anonymity, but describe, you know, what they were struggling with and how this process helped them.
Sure. So we facilitated this process at a community center locally in the area. And it was an adult participant there who, after our presentation, came to us and they said they've never even thought of looking at all aspects of themselves. I think we live in a such hustle-based society that doesn't give us time to sit and think about what makes up pieces of who we are. What am I the sum of? I'm the sum of all my parts, but what are these parts? And I remember them sharing with us that they've never had the time to just sit and ask themselves, who am I? You know? And more than just my name, what makes up parts of who I am? And I think that conversation is the catalyst, like a great spot to start to potentially build empathy and compassion towards ourselves and each other. So that was one takeaway that I had about that one time that we facilitated this training.
You are listening to C-Realm Radio on WOOL 91.5 FM, Bellows Falls. I'm KMO, and I am joined by two people who work at our local community justice center right here in Bellows Falls. Let me ask you each to reintroduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I'm the outreach and advocacy coordinator.
And I'm Fabio Ayala. I am the victim advocate and conflict mediator.
So we'll mention this a couple of times, but you each, well, together, have a fundraiser coming up next Saturday. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, so if y'all were listening earlier, we were talking about one of the trainings that we do. In that training, actually, we got invited to present in Belgium at the World Conference run by the International Institute for Restorative Practices, the IIRP. So this conference is in May in Belgium, and Fabio, myself, and our coworker Becca will be going there. So we're doing a fundraiser to send us there, and it's going to be a soup and salad fundraiser on March 23rd from 5 to 8 p.m. at SIT, the School for International Training. There's a cafe right on campus there called El Cafe, and that's where the fundraiser will be. It will be $10 for a ticket, all you can eat soup and salad. Tickets can be bought in advance, come on by the Justice Center, or you can just come right to SIT campus and buy tickets at the door. Either one is fine. In addition, there will be live music.
Yes, there'll definitely be some live music. I'm a lover of music and I'm also an artist, so I'll be performing at the event. So that'll be really exciting to get out there.
Well, had I known that you were a musician, I would have invited you to send me a track or two. You could have played them here on the radio.
I will give that to you before we go, or I can give you a live, whatever you're in.
A track or two. You could have played them here on the radio.
I will give that to you before we go, or I can give you a live, whatever you're interested in.
Live, as in a performance right now?
Absolutely.
Please do.
Sure. So this is my first single. It's called Unless. It's out on all social media platforms and music platforms. Something was stolen, never mind. Maybe we lost it over time. Can we redo what we did when we did it the best? Unless there's no time. So that's a little something something.
Wonderful, thank you. Well, hey, here's the, for me, the elephant in the room. We have a big problem with heroin around here. Mm-hmm. I know that must touch on the work that you do. So we'll start with Jordan. Just say whatever you care to on that topic.
Yeah. Actually, one of the other parts of my job that I'm working on right now is I'm working with a bunch of the guys at Phoenix Rise House here in Bellows Falls, the transitional housing unit. And I meet with them once a week, doing a circle, talking about stigma, and specifically talking about stigma around being incarcerated and struggling with addiction. So each week, they are assigned to take pictures around two different words relating to stigma. They've all come up with the words, and they have to take a photo that represents that word to them. So, for example, one week it was loneliness, and restlessness. So they had to take photos of what they thought that meant to them and how that related to stigma around and or incarceration and addiction. And many of them are struggling with different types of addiction. And so what does that mean? How does stigma impact them internally? What are the judgments that they're constantly telling themselves over the struggles they've gone through? And what are the struggles that they're dealing with around stigma in the community? This is a small community, and kind of having that mark of addiction on you can be really harmful, can be painful, and be difficult to kind of function here, whether it's getting jobs, housing, assistance. So we work on talking about how stigma impacts all of us and how we can humanize each other and realize that we all make mistakes, and what can we do as a community to support each other and work with this huge problem that's affecting Bellas Falls and really the country in general.
I think my work specifically doesn't specifically address heroin and opioids, but if you recall the Ripples reference that I made, I think our work, or specifically my work, is working with the Ripples effect of this epidemic in this community, in our work with young people. So I also, the same way Jordan runs girls empowerment circles with our young ladies, I work with our young male population around boys council, is what we call it. And a lot of the topics that come in could be influenced by the epidemic happening. A lot of young people come in with stories of their parents, of experiences that they've had, and it's held in a safe space where they get to know that they're sharing their story and also being heard by their colleagues and their peers. So I think this is also a really important part of addressing the epidemic hitting this community and surrounding communities, and also on a national level.
Earlier, Jordan mentioned COSA, that's Circles of Support and Accountability, and I'm a community member in a COSA circle. And before I could participate in that activity, I had to undergo some training that was provided by the Department of Corrections. So I think technically I'm an employee of the Department of Corrections, which is, anybody who knows my story would think that's absurd. I'm lucky in that I'm 50. So I grew up in the 80s. And the 80s, in terms of criminal justice, was a much more forgiving time. I got arrested a few times. I did a lot of drinking when I was underage. I smoked weed and did some other drugs as well. And at that time, it seems like it was a lot easier to get out of trouble. I got busted by cops with beer in the car and weed in the car, and they would just pour it out and dump it out and tell me to go home. And I can't imagine that happening today. That seems, it's the people that I encounter who have been swept up into the Department of Corrections, it is very, very hard to get out of that orbit, particularly if you have been released on furlough, which is something that most states don't do. Vermont is one of the few that does. Furlough means you're basically serving your sentence out in the community. You've been released from prison, but you're not on parole. Mm-hmm. And you are monitored, oh, so monitored, when you are out on furlough. And there's just so many little slip-ups that can send you back to jail. And it seems like the primary focus and intention of the Department of Corrections is to catch people in those slip-ups. Technical violations, they're called. Not new crimes. Not new bad behavior on a big scale, but not quite walking the line. But certainly, like back in the 80s, nothing that would have sent you to jail. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage each of you to say anything about that you care to.
And hearing your story, I think of those of our community members who have other intersections, and how much it would be even more difficult for them to move through these systems. I think of our community members who identify as Black and Brown and queer and coming from different social classes. Like, there's so many systems layered and layered and layered and layered upon each other that has made it at times impossible to really move through this justice system in a way that is actually just. which is why I think our work is so important, and also collaborations are so important, because we also don't want to paint the picture that that current, we have to separate system from people. And I think that in this community, there's the law enforcement community and the justice community has been working so hard to really make sure the needs of these of community members are met, especially the population coming out of prison, which is why it's important for justice centers to keep collaborating with law enforcement officers so that it can be done justly.
I should mention in just a detail about my story. I didn't grow up in Vermont. I've only lived here about 3 years. I grew up when I was, you know, a rambunctious teenager. I lived in Kansas City, Missouri. There's a very large African-American population in Kansas City, Missouri. I had a lot of African-American friends. So I know that even back then, it was certainly true that young black men suffered more at the hands of police than their white counterparts, even at the same, you know, socioeconomic level. But at the same time, I knew a lot of, you know, young black guys who got in trouble who they were not perpetually in the orbit of the criminal justice system thereafter, you know, provided they behaved as they were told, you know, they were allowed to go on and have a normal life. And it just doesn't seem like that's the case anymore.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The systems in place right now really catch people. And many of the people we work with are out of jail, and it's so easy for them to get sent right back in. So I guess I would say that's a big thing that we try, whether it's in COSA, whether it's in our rep panels, or just the support that we try to provide at the Justice Center and working with other organizations, is how can we find the support that these people need so that they don't get sent back, because there's so much going against them. How can we as a community step up to, if you need a ride to a job that if you miss, you're going to get sent back, how can we find those rides? Transportation is a huge issue, especially in southern Vermont. If you don't have a license and you can't drive, it's really hard to get anywhere, especially a job, especially to check in with your parole officer. There's a lot of things going against you. So one of the things we really do at the Justice Center is trying to connect people to different resource centers. Parks Place, who we work with, is huge, connecting people to all different sorts of different resources that they might need that can hopefully help them stay out. But it's definitely a flawed system on many levels.
And you had mentioned that last point that you made about a flawed system. No matter how much time you spent, like if a system is broken, if there's something wrong with the system, this idea that time will fix it is false. It just makes it worse. And that encompasses your story about earlier. It seemed that,
absolutely,
yeah, like if the pipe is broken and it's leaking, the longer you leave it that way, the worse it's going to get.
More of what doesn't work.
Yes. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing and expecting the same results.
A different result.
Different results, yeah.
So I create media all week long. When I leave here today, I'll be drawing a comic strip. I have to write it first. I'll spend many hours doing that. But then tomorrow, I will be taking a camera from Fact TV and going to shoot a trustees meeting at Saxons River. And then the next night, I'll be here in Bellows Falls doing the same. And, you know, there's a heroin, I guess it's a methadone clinic in Brattleboro. Now, when I go to these, you know, trustees meetings or select board meetings, usually the only people in the room are the elected officials, whatever people are coming to, you know, provide a report or give some information to them, a couple of newspaper reporters, and me. Really, for the most part, and there's one guy who shows up to pretty much every meeting, you know, who's just an observer, and he likes to comment. But for the most part, the room is empty. But if somebody were to propose opening a methadone clinic here in Bellows Falls at the very next select board meeting or trustees meeting, that room would be packed with people objecting to it, who would not want it to happen. They don't want any more of those people coming to Bellows Falls. And that's a phrase I hear a lot in this town or this village. You know, when referring to people who either have drug problems or they're poor or they've been caught up in the criminal justice system, those people I hear that phrase a lot. You can tell from my tone, probably it raises my hackles. But you're talking about getting rides. You know, people on Medicare or Medicaid, I guess, can get rides from the state. And some of them, you know, they get a ride down to Brattleboro every day for their methadone. But then if the ride flakes and doesn't show up, what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. I mean, the answer is it's a rhetorical question. They're going to go get some heroin, and it's easy to find. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the services for people who don't drive are patchy, and you really do have to have a car to get along in rural Vermont, particularly in the South.
Mm. That when you had mentioned about there being many different sides on the issue of putting in a methadone clinic in the community, I think of there's a model for conflict that we studied in school. It's called the onion model for conflict. It's like three circles, an outer circle, a medium circle, and a core circle. And the outside circle is a position. And the inside is the interest. And then in the core are needs. So like when we engage, when we go into conflict, we'll use this example. I'm holding a giraffe in the studio. Let's say we both want this giraffe. And we're arguing over this need that we have over this giraffe. And when we take it, I say, I want it. That's our position, right? And then you take it, it's because you want it. That's your position. Conflict at times stays in that outer circle of position. I want it, and that's all I can tell you. But if we peel back that first layer of position, we get to interest. And the interest is, if we sit down and talk about this, if we sit in a circle, you'll know that I really want this giraffe because it's orange. That's the interest of mine. And maybe you want the giraffe because it has brown hair. And if we continue this dialogue of storytelling, you'll also know that I took the giraffe because it's yellow. And behind that need, yellow is my favorite color because it was the color of the dress of my grandmother that passed away. So there's position, interest, and need. I know Jordan talked about need, understanding the need of community. I feel that it's going through that process. And how can we go through that process? By sitting down and hearing each other's stories. So like when I think of the opioid epidemic and the heroin epidemic, and I think of the conflicts going on in our community, I really feel this model, this onion model for conflict, is so relevant in seeking restorative solutions.
In the example you just gave, the yellow that reminded you of your grandmother's dress, what need are you identifying there?
That's a great question. A need for, when I think of my grandmother, she met the need of love and safety. So maybe, and I know it seems so strange that a giraffe would meet a need of safety, but it's what's connected to the objects, the stories connected to these things, and the emotions connected to those stories.
If you want it, I absolutely have to have it, because I'm just competitive that way. Mm. So, Jordan, how would you help us mediate this dispute? Because really, I'm going to take that giraffe.
I guess I would say we would break it down and say, what is your need? Why do you want this? Is it just because of the competition? And what else could meet that need for competition? Is there something else that you could get? Is there, maybe it's competition because you need that relationship with someone else to compete with. Maybe you just want to play a game, to develop a friendship with someone. What we would probably talk about, what do you need from that? Because often it is more than just wanting something. Competition can have a huge root against it. Maybe, we find out as a child you didn't get the first pick on toys, and so you're grabbing that now. It might seem silly now as an adult, but going down to the root of it, it makes a lot more sense. Maybe we would need Fabio to talk a little bit more about what he needed and try to get you to be more empathetic to his need, to maybe say, okay, yes, I want that, but I can see more why you need that and you need it more than I do. So I'm willing to sacrifice that need of mine to give you that. And maybe we can turn that around into competition, in that you were able to step up and have his need met over yours.
And I know that sounds rather like utopian, or like it seems like this fantasy of what conflict is supposed to break down to. But I think that if we really apply some of these models in diverse ways and in creative ways, with that still being at the core of understanding what is the need behind the way we react to things.
Now, do you find that a lot of people have needs that they don't really understand themselves?
Very much so.
Absolutely.
What are some common examples there?
Okay, so like in a lot of our conflict mediation work that we do, you'll find that people will come into conflict because of this one act that was done. But when they sit down and they have clear-cut solutions for what can be done to fix this, at the core, what they really needed was for the person who hurt them to know that they hurt them. That was the one thing they needed, despite all the reasons that brought them there. At the core, that person just wanted to tell the person who hurt them that, ouch, that hurt. And you'll find that in a lot of conflicts, at the core, that's one of the needs. Just communicating and sharing that what you did hurt me. And also in the same way that I can understand that something I did hurt you. My favorite quote is Desmond Tutu. I think he's so amazing. And he has this quote that says, our capacity to forgive others is rooted in our capacity to know that we can hurt and be hurt. So I think that the answer to conflict is when we come to the consciousness that I have the ability to be hurt. Like, someone can hurt me with their words, with their actions. But also, in that same capacity, I can do the same to others.
Jordan, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, that was really well said. But I guess I would just add that a lot of times it is just looking at the bigger picture. So we do react to these things right in the moment, and emotions can flare up. We get really angry, we get sad, we get upset. And really what we try to do is kind of slow that down and look beyond what happened right in the moment and what has happened further in the past, what has happened even in our childhoods, and what do we want in the future, and how does that one action that has caused this conflict, how does that impact all of that? And that can really help people see, okay, I maybe did this one crime and that was bad, but why did I do that? And how did that hurt someone? And maybe it seems small to me, but maybe their mailbox that I hit with my car that I thought was some cheap, ugly, stupid mailbox was actually a mailbox given to them by their, I don't know, relative who has now passed away, or someone handmade that that I wouldn't know. But upon talking to them, I can understand why they were hurt.
Before we went on the air, you both expressed a little anxiety that maybe you didn't have an hour's worth of conversation in you, and we have just 10 minutes left. So I've been asking all the questions and leading the conversation up to this point, but is there anything, any topic that you'd like to speak on that we haven't touched on yet? I'm afraid long pauses don't work so well
live
radio.
I think I would love to just take a couple moments and really highlight what we have through this identity wheel that we were talking about earlier. I'd really love to just highlight a little bit more of the variety behind this model.
Is there some place where people can find that online so they know?
It's a great question.
A visual representation of what you're talking about?
That's a great question. there is a, through the University of Michigan, they have an inclusive training website that talks about the origins of social identity wheel. And it's a long link, but maybe I can somehow pass it over to you. But if you Google social identity wheel connected to University of Michigan, you'll definitely find the link to, and it'll give you exactly the overview of the model, how it's been used, where it's been adapted from, and even give you examples of this social identity wheel model.
We also will have examples of our identity wheels, both on our website and our Facebook page, which is the Greater Falls Community Justice Center, where we have more information on what we do and the trainings that we do and what we'll be doing in Belgium. I guess additionally, what I wanted to talk about was that a big thing of our work is not what we specifically do, but it's what the community does. And so in order for that work to be done, we need more volunteers. Mm-hmm. We need more people working with us. We're a small organization, and a lot of the community doesn't know about us. So come by and see us. We're right next to Parks Place on 44 School Street. We're always open to more volunteers, volunteering to be on a COSA, rep panels, our events. Please come by and we can sign you up and find something for you to do. Definitely our work is community-based work.
And some folks might not be comfortable just walking in the door cold. Is there a website?
Yep, we do have a website, and it's greaterfallscommunityjusticecenter.org. We also are on Facebook. So feel free to send us a message. We respond pretty quickly within a couple days. And we're more than happy to figure out a place that you might feel comfortable doing what you want to do.
So I'm in COSA. What are some other opportunities for volunteers?
So we also have volunteers for our reparative board, reparative panels, which are panels made up of community members and our awesome colleague, Samia Abbas. She runs our reparative panels in our office. She's super dope, super nice, and really committed to this community. And she runs reparative panels where we also need volunteers and community members to sit on those boards, which I believe is once a month. I believe so. Yeah, once. She's giving me the nod. Once a month. And our COSAs are once a week.
So you're both students, and you're in a course of full-time study down in Brattleboro?
Yes, we are.
So how does that balance with your work with the Justice Center here?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so we were in classes full-time last year, but this year we are in our practicum and capstone phase. So we're actually not in classes anymore, and all of our work is done working on our research and capstone work. So writing papers and communicating with our peers and advisors, mostly through online platforms.
And in connection to the Justice Center, both of our master's thesis are based through the Justice Center and our work with the Justice Center. Mm-hmm. So mine is working specifically around how circles can assist in having young boys connect with themselves and their peers around their shared male identity. And Jordan is?
And mine is on the work that I talked about previously, and it's how we can reduce stigma, both internalized and externalized stigma around incarceration and addiction using photos and circle processes.
And your school, SIT, what does that stand for again?
School of International Learning.
School for International Training.
Lord, you can take back my alumni status now because I can't even say the name right.
what can you say about the students who are pursuing, you know, their education there? I mean, you can't talk about all of them, you know, as a single person, but in general, what sort of goals or aspirations do people have? You know, your former classmates.
Yeah. So. SIT is a really unique school. It's very small, but it brings people from all over the world to study. And it takes on an experiential model, so less sitting in lectures, hearing the teacher and professor speak at you. And it's really working on how do we address these different issues by working together, by bringing in different resources, by bringing in different theories, sitting with each other and bringing different views from around the world to address things that happen all over the world, but in our small communities.
What really stands out about the school is that it's not just professors. It's practitioner-based. So all the professors are currently in the field working and also teaching. So it makes for such a rich experience in the classroom. And there's currently, well, when the school is currently shifting. So when we were in class, the degrees available were sustainable development, peace building and conflict transformation, ESL, and TESOL was another degree. And the fourth one was
International Education.
International Education, yes.
Where in Brattleboro is it?
So it's right outside of the main town off of exit 3 up Black Mountain Road, kind of looking over the hill.
Little top of the hill school.
So I don't have a clear picture of where it is, but I am interested in this soup and salad fundraiser, which again is next Saturday. What time does it start?
5 to 8 p.m.
And again, this is just a fundraiser to help raise funds to be able to send Jordan, my colleague Becca, and myself to Belgium to be able to present on our work in the community of Bellows Falls and rural communities in Vermont, and also kind of a way to bring back what we learned there. I think that's really important to us. In both of our degree fields, they've always talked about the importance of making sure communities come first. Bellows Falls has been so gracious to Jordan, myself, and the Community Justice Center. And we would love this opportunity to go overseas and learn about international practices and strategies and really bring them back. So that's one important part of this piece of this work. We want to be able to come back after this conference and share new strategies.
And I know from having been to a great many conferences and having traveled quite a bit that probably the richest part of your experience there will not be sitting and listening to lectures or giving a lecture, but the people, the contacts that you make in that environment.
Absolutely. And be able to bring Bellows Falls to that platform is so important. So, so important.
Well, we're down to just over 2 minutes. So any closing statements from either of you?
Thank you for having us here. And we love to talk about what we do. We're really passionate about this community and the work we do. And anytime we can share more about what we do is an honor for us.
Yeah, and I share in those sentiments. Thank you so much for this platform to be able to share the work we do that we just love doing. We wouldn't be unpaid interns for nothing. You know, we do it because we care about it, and we know that it works, and we know it's powerful. And we both have lived experiences in this community and outside of this community of restorative justice being the future of our schools, of our prison systems, of our communities. And thank you for letting us talk about something that we really love talking about.
Well, it's something that's important to me as well. So you're helping me out. What is your website if somebody wanted to hear more of your music?
Absolutely. So I don't have a website officially yet. Still working on that. But it's available on Spotify, on Apple Music, on YouTube, YouTube playlist. It's available anywhere. You can look up Fabio, F-A-B-I-O, and the single is called Unless. It's the first release from my up-and-coming album called First Fall that I hope to be releasing this summer.
You're listening to the Sea Realm podcast with your host, KMO.
That was Jordan and Fabio. They are both interns at the Greater Falls Community Justice Center. And I know that most of you listening to this are not in Vermont or even in the northeast of the United States or in the United States at all. So most of you won't have the opportunity to attend the Soup and Salad fundraiser in Brattleboro, Vermont. I'll be there. And if anything really cool happens, well, I'll probably talk about it in the YouTube video for the next day. I realize that I'm not putting out these free Sea Realm podcasts very often these days, and I'm afraid that with all the things that I'm doing, when it comes time to doing podcasts, I have to put my energy toward fulfilling my commitment to the Sea Realm Vault subscribers. But again, I am producing lots of new content, and you can find it on YouTube. My YouTube channel is called Out of My Head. It's OUTTAMYHEAD. And if you can't find it searching with that, then search for, I hate to say this, Humans Suck. It is an introduction to misanthropic antinatalism that I made at the TV station here a couple years ago. And it is, unfortunately, my most watched video. I'll say more about that in a future episode, probably a future episode of the Sea Realm Vault podcast. For those of you who only listen to these free podcasts, well, I will talk to you sooner or later. Possibly later. And for Sea Realm Vault subscribers, well, I'll be putting out a new Vault episode today. Whichever category you fall into, thank you very much for listening, and I will talk to you again soon. Until then, stay well.